Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When we heard that two of our favourite people had got together and made an album, we just had to organise a walk with them. The musician and actor Johnny Flynn and the writer Robert McFarlane have spent the lockdown creating an album called Lost in the Cedarwood. And on a hot, hot day, we've come to the outskirts of Cambridge, to the Wandlebury Country Park, and we're going to go on a walk with these two and learn more about their relationship and about the music that they've created together.
Three, four.
There's a black dog following hard on my tree. Set firm on hollowing my heart till it fades. Lug this old bag of bones seven times home. Oh, I'm 10 degrees of strange. I'm trying to change, trying to shake off my shadow. Still hoping to stay out of the black dog's rain. So I run, 'cause I must leave that dog in the dust. Gonna run like the river right down to the sea. Gonna run like the sap through the heart of a tree. I run 'cause I must leave that dog in the dust.
Robert and Johnny, good morning.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for joining us for Folk on Foot. Second time for you, Johnny, obviously, but the first time for you, Robert. Where have you brought us to?
So we're at Wandlebury Hill Fort. It's an Iron Age hill fort. Just off to our left is the ditch, and that was cut about 400 BC. So this was a huge encampment, defensive encampment in that period. It's the Iceni, the tribes of Brittonic tribes of the east of Boudicca and Boadicea and everything. So this was one of the strongholds. And we're sort of walking along its rim, and then history has come along and layered and layered and layered on top of itself. South Cambridge, Gogmagog Hills. There's sort of the Himalayas of Cambridge like this. But this is about as high as it gets around here.
Oh, you were the pebble and I was the ripple. Oh, you were the puzzle and I was the riddle. Got lost in the middle. We took signs for wonders and some of the meteors. In
winter, the thunder, the trees split asunder.
And what's the route that you're going to take us on, Robert?
I think we're going to walk to where this encampment bridges onto a Roman road that was probably a Neolithic, almost certainly a Neolithic trackway. But this is the Romans built a road here from South Cambridge all the way to Colchester. And there's a narrow, straight section of it that we'll end up on.
And this is a pretty gentle walk by your standards, I take it.
You've caught him having satiated his mountain desires last week.
That is
did
true.
You do that last week?
I was in the Southern Highlands in Scotland climbing with my son, yeah, Tom. It was magic, yeah. So we got up some big hills together for the first time. And I just spammed Johnny with photos.
It was really nice. So I was stuck in a quarantine in London and getting these pictures of Rob on top of the world. I was very happy for him.
Wherever we wander, now I'm storm bound on high ground, the jack of the head, a wreck on the beach, still trying to stay out of the black dog's reach. Some days I long for the grace of an end. Dam up the river, dry out its bed. Bury me there, body and head. Far from the black dog's song. So I run, cause I must leave that dog in the dust. Gonna run like the river, right down to the sea. Gonna run like the sap through the heart of a tree. I run cause I must see that dog in the dust.
I want to learn a little bit about how you came into each other's consciousness, really. And I think we've heard a bit about this in the episode of Folk on Foot that Johnny did. Oh, yeah. But Robert, I wanted to know how Johnny's music first came to your attention.
Yeah. Well, I had a friend called Henry, and he made me mix CDs. He made me more than 100 mix CDs over about 10 years. And he really shaped my music tastes in that decade, sort of my 20s into my 30s. And on one of them was this song by a man called Johnny Flynn, and it was called Ghost of O'Donoghue. I just remember listening to it and hearing these opening do 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 do, and it just, I felt this kind of shiver and stillness go through me, and then this incredible, strange song. I'm thought, you know, who's the ghost? Who's O'Donoghue? What do these words mean?
Do you know?
No, I've got no idea, Johnny. I'm hoping you might tell me today, but. And then it became such a core song for me, deep in my soul. And I would sing it in my head in the mountains, almost at one point to a problematic degree when I fell in a crevasse in the Swiss Alps not long after I'd stopped humming it. But anyway,
and
I got it.
It became the ghost of Robert McFarlane.
Yeah, exactly. Johnny, will you write my epitaph song? Is that too heavy a question for a sunny day?
So it really made a big impression on you.
Just huge, and it still does. I mean, I can't get enough of it, really. I still listen to it and find new things in it, and it sits with me always and always will. And when I was walking this book called The Old Ways, which actually begins here, leaving my home, walking the footpath that leads to the Roman road, that leads to the Icknield Way, it's Neolithic trackway, and...
Sorry. You see, Johnny's got his guitar with him.
Johnny's getting bored by spiders. Or...
I'm still here. Yeah. No, there's some insect that... I think it's gone now. I was trying to get down my shirt.
Let me have a check. Yeah, all clear. You know, you've got this jukebox in your brain when you're walking, don't you? And you stick a dime in the brain jukebox and out comes, you know, in my case, almost entirely Johnny Flynn songs.
Johnny, you wouldn't care to sing the song for us, would you?
Oh, I'd love to sing it.
Oh, that would be brilliant.
I love that it's that song, by the way, that sort of introduced me to you, because I love that song as well. And actually, Bea, my wife, that's one of her favourite songs. Wow. But it wasn't on an album. It was just a sort of... I had to write a B-side for the first... few singles that we put out for our first album.
And who is the ghost?
We'd been on one of our first tours, I think, supporting Iron and Wine in Ireland, and I'd gone to the National Gallery in Dublin and seen a painting called The Ghost of O'Donoghue, and it was of a, I think there's a lake, anyway, there's a local myth, which I've forgotten, about a ghost that visits this lake and somebody having a visitation. It was going to Ireland for the first time on that tour, actually, that was quite a precious thing for me because it's where my father's family came from. It's hard to talk about what it's about because it's really of that place and time and something of the mystery of me meeting that culture for the first time. The counterpoint to Rob's story is that I discovered his books, hadn't met him, and was reading these books and being inspired to write songs. I suppose the seeds of our shared ideas and ways of expressing things were there before being so aware of each other. And then, well, for me, I swear, much more than for Rob, his work was giving a form and channeling my ideas and giving me confidence to write the sort of songs that I wanted to write. So it was really, really powerful for me. And then these books arrived. I was doing a play at the Globe Theatre, and a mutual friend of ours who was an ex-student of Rob's delivered me a package of books, and there was a lovely letter and inscription in each book from Rob, and he'd so generously kind of wanted to reach out, and I was like, well, I've got all these books today. But it was so nice to get the letter and then find each other and connect. Mm.
Yeah. I'm so excited about this.
Have you ever heard this song in once. The open air?
Never in the open air. No, I love the fact that we've got like a grasshopper orchestra stridulating away, probably 10,000 in this immense meadow behind us.
They sound like an overcharged electric fence, don't they?
It's yeah, they like, do.
These are the days, you know where you'll be, you won't know what you see. Roots in my chains, so all that remains is a pull from place to place. We left our homes in the spring sunshine. Things came alive when I knew they weren't mine. Falling in line didn't matter at all. We knew we'd go and we each heard the call. This is the calendar. These are the days. You know where you'll be. You won't know what you see. Roots of my chain. So all that remains is a pole from place to place. Pylons found fault lines to run through the heart. Heart of the land beat with odd fits and starts. So they ran round the eldest and grey of the hills to let the old die without power or pill. This is the calendar. These are the days. You know where you'll be, you won't know what you see. Roots in my chain, so all that remains is a pull from place to place. Dublin took off, though you've never heard told. There's a line of good men with eyes wet and cold, where they weep for the crows, bearing twigs for the nest, changing the shape of the trees they love best. This is the calendar. These are the days. You know where you'll be. You won't know what you see. The roots in my chains. Oh, all that remains is a pull from place to place. Ghost of O'Donoghue, scared not the lad.
desert respect, lost the smile he'd worn, glad, sat quite chief and forlorn, and pitched with the spectre, escaped all exhaustions and prayers from the rector, and with glance dancing devout pulled a frown. Hold on. And with glancing devout pulled a frown from his sack, boiled with loaves from the oven and ale from the rack. This is the calendar, these are the days. You know who you'll be, you won't know what you see. Roots might change, so all that remains is a boat from place to place. The last days of my life, oh, I won't know whether to laugh or cry. In the last days of my life, oh, I won't know whether to laugh or cry. In the last days of my life, oh, I won't know whether to laugh or cry.
So we might walk back down that way and then sort of cut along that way into some slightly more open ground, and then we'll be... There's an amazing tree that I just love. It's this huge home oak. You like home oaks, don't you, Johnny?
Definitely.
So we could go there. That might be a good place for a song.
That would be lovely. Yeah. I'm interested in what the experience of going for a walk with you is like, Robert, because...
Very boring, but as you're discovering.
No, I've always wanted to do it because I kind of assume that you are... you know, when you're not chatting to me and Johnny and so on, but that you are quite attuned to your surroundings and that you're paying a lot of attention to them. Is that right?
I don't know. I guess so. I sort of... A few people sort of say, oh, it'd be really nice to go for a walk with you or, with, you know, with Rob McFarlane. But I just think, God, they're going to be so disappointed. It's not, you know, I don't enter this extrasensory perception mode or anything. I mean, I am... This is a place I know really well, but I'm fascinated by the... You've got scabious down here, this gorgeous purple-pink flower that lingers long into winter, actually. It's often the last of the chalk flora. And
this is what happens, you see. He does the thing that some people do really annoyingly in the most generous and graceful way.
Oh, no, like,
it's so... That's why I love it.
We're going to learn something here.
Yeah, anyway, as you were.
Well, I think it's risky being like the tour guide, because... First of all, I don't know the names of everything at all. There's a famous, I think David Gessner writes this essay called Sick of Nature, and it begins something like, I'm sick of being the guy who, whenever anyone finds an animal turd on the path, they turn to you and say, what's this turd from then? But no, I really am a rank amateur at trees, at flowers, at creatures. I just love natural history, and above all, I love landscape, because to me that is... one of the great compound nouns. It's a collective noun. It carries human presence, more than human presence. It works in layers and many voices. You know, when you're in landscape, you are in it. It's not a scene set. It's not something you skim along the surface of. It is a medium, and somewhere like this just exaggerates that because it's so layered. It's, you know, got Godolphin stables from the 18th century, and we've got Iron Age hill forts and Roman roads and Neolithic trackways, and it's so intense. But every landscape is like that, and no landscape should be spoken by a single voice.
My feeling of it is, having walked with you a bit, it makes your being in the landscape so much more active. You know, when you know what tree you're looking at, your concern for everything goes up, and then your excitement, it's this engagement that makes being in natural landscapes so much more fun. I found myself on film sets where I used to get so bored kind of hanging around waiting for shots, but it's quite rare to be even on a set and not be able to see a tree out the window or deep in the woods waiting for something to be set up. And I'm looking around going, oh, God, yeah, OK, I don't need to worry about how I'm going to pass this next hour while they set up a light or something. I'm looking at these trees.
We've always said that walking is a fantastic time to talk as well, because you've got endless time, and also you walk side by side with people. Absolutely. So you're not kind of confronting them eye to eye as you would be in a studio maybe or whatever. And so you tend to have a more intimate conversation. But Sam Lee said to me, he said, also, you should shut up and listen, you know, because there are sounds to be heard in nature that you're missing if you're rabbiting on. But do you find it a time when you'd rather be alone, Robert, or would you rather be with somebody when you're walking?
These days, I just would always rather be with somebody. Like, my favourite path is one that's wide enough for two people. This lovely silver birch is here, by the way. I call them the watching tree. Well, you see the eyes, basically. They've got eyes, birches.
Eyes, they're just like steps going up, actually, aren't they? But they're eyes in the bark.
In the bark, yeah. These very dark eyes, sort of slightly sad eyes. The eyebrows sort of fall either side of it. So some of them are where branches were and have gone, and others are just sort of natural artifacts of the splitting of the silver. Or in fact, it's really white birch. But I just, whenever I'm with birch trees, it's like you remember that the world is watching you as well as you watching the world. But also, being out, like when I got to the top of these mountains with Tom, I didn't, you know, perorate. I was just like, wow, this is cool. I'm on a hilltop with my son. How good is that? Like, sometimes language, you don't, you know, as Sam says, you don't need to say much.
No. And what about the experience for you, Johnny, of being out walking? Does it provoke creativity and thought?
Totally, yeah. I think the first big walk that I went on, that I realised quite how powerful that sort of launch pad of feeling and thought could be, was walking on my own. I think I told you last time we were walking together about walking the Camino to Santiago, and being on my own and kind of getting scared sometimes, and then realising that your footfall, the pace that you're at, can bring your mind to that pace. And suddenly, you know, we live such overstimulated lives, and you know, you could be at the pace of the spider's web and, you know, the glistening dewdrop and just feel that. Yeah, being kind of content with that is such a wonderful place to be.
So I want to now ask you about the album that you've made together and how it began. How did the seeds of the idea first start? Johnny?
It's just always been the feeling that we wanted to kind of make things together, and the tidal wave of the pandemic was coming towards us, and everything was starting to shut down, and our live stuff was disappearing, your talks and tours and events and things, and my gigs and TV and film and theatre commitments were all just being kind of shut down. You called me early on.
We weren't even in lockdown perhaps at that point.
It was mid-March
a few days after the...
Yeah, just lockdown. As we were sort of realising it was getting, you know, weird.
Well, it was a wild time, wasn't it? We were all flailing around for any purchase, anything, stomach-flipping horror at what was vanishing and what was arriving in terms of this new world. And so I think I just said, everything's gone. Why don't we try and make something in that space that's just appeared and sort of hold the shadows and the fears at bay a little bit? So it began very modestly, just like maybe a song, maybe two songs. And then at the end of the first phone call, I think it was, I said, well, you know, maybe it'll become something bigger. There's, you know, maybe this it could be part of a bigger or an older story. And we were sort of scratching our heads about what that might be. And I had the Epic of Gilgamesh just behind me, because I'd written about it in Underland, at the beginning of Underland, because it's the oldest written story in world literature, and it contains in one of its variant tablets a journey to the underworld. And I'd just completed this book Underland. And I sort of said, just tossed it off at the end. I was like, well, there's always Gilgamesh.
Like you do.
And Johnny's ears pricked up.
This is the homework.
Here it is. I actually feel incredibly excited about bringing you here and about... because it is this immense home oak, and it has such a clear border or threshold or sort of...
You're entering the oak.
And yeah. The idea of like going in there with you, Johnny, and Matthew, and hearing music being performed there is just so perfect. You'll see when you get in that it sort of has multiple trunks. It's kind of, it's shot up here and shot up there, and it's...
There's no continuity with Homeworks, is there? Like, in terms of what they end up... You can sort of imagine the archetypal oak or ash or whatever, but Homeworks always just... This one's allowed to just be wide and its own thing.
Let's go in.
Crossing the threshold, and it gives us blessed shade as well. That's the other thing.
On a day like today, where the temperature is so high... I mean, temperature records are being broken, aren't they, at the moment in the UK?
Yeah, Northern Ireland. So,
and look at these different trunks.
Yeah.
So, Rob, what are these turds? No, I'm joking.
We are surrounded by turds. Oh, these are the lesser-spotted Siberian grey owl. So there's a horse chestnut, which sort of lives in the lee and the shelter of the home oak as well. And then the home oak here, sort of, we can see there's sort of four huge trunks that have come up. And underneath us, there'll be all this, the mycorrhizal network, the fungal wood wide web, as it's called, is busy sort of connecting the chestnut to the home oak. And Johnny is right, there are many, many turds. and I can tell you that they belong to the Highland cattle that graze land. Does that seem about right?
They don't look like rabbits.
We grow big rabbits around here.
Not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah. So would you sing us one of the songs from the album?
Yeah, I will. Which one? What's a good one? What have we teed up with the turds?
I feel like in a way like Enkidu is sort of is present. Okay. Wasn't that the first one?
That's the first one.
First one we wrote.
Yeah. What happens in that first episode where Enkidu is sort of birthed into the civilized world? The veil is ripped from his animal sight, and he's brought to meet Gilgamesh by Shamat, a holy woman in the story. And he walks for, you know, many days to the town of Uruk. Is that Uruk? And you feel in that description of the walk away from the woods where he's been living with the creatures, he's becoming a sort of a humanoid, you know, figure. And it's this kind of coming out of his naivety.
We should also say that part of Enkidu's civilizing process is that he
I was leaving this to you.
Okay. He lies with Shamhat, this very strong kind of female presence in the story, for 7 days and seven nights. And he has what has been described as the longest erection in the history of literature. So it goes...
It's an important thing to know about.
This is pre-Viagra.
Longest in terms of days and nights, as opposed to...
not in terms of size.
No comment. Definitely duration. So, and I think the
I knew the homo reminded me of something.
I think the other is not specified in the original.
C, 4. Enkidu walks away. Enkidu sighed in vain. Enkidu waved for the flowers. Enkidu walked again. Oh, you know I have no answers. The trees have my heart and they won't give it back to me. Now my eyes have been opened. The future is crumbling, the bars are all black with trees. Oh friend, oh my friend, oh my friend. Enkidu walked away. Enkidu sighed in pain. Enkidu waved for the flowers. Enkidu walked again. Oh, I can see in the darkness the storm clouds are gathering. I'm nearing your proud city. I can hear the foxes' calls now. The beasts have my heart and they won't. to me, oh friend, oh my friend, oh my friend. I have a dream of my symmetry, an echo of death. I have a drum beating grief and all falsehoods to test. I have a path through the cedar wood, I hear humbaba's roar. I have a dream, I have a dream, cloaked in feathers to fall through the earth. Tents on the hillsides and fires in the wood. The birds have my heart and they won't give it back to me. Oh, friend, oh, my friend, oh, my friend.
That's incredibly powerful.
Wow.
Really powerful stuff. And the guitar gives it such power. And in this setting, it feels absolutely perfect, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's so fun playing. You know, it's just having a reason to... I mean, for me, I think this is why I've been... An aspect of my being has been so sort of confused and sad, because I live in that space where I'm sharing songs. And we were at this amazing wedding of our friend Cosmo on the weekend.
Cosmo Sheldrake. Yes, star of the Folk on Foot podcast.
Yeah. Well, there was live, you know, all of Cosmo's friends are musicians. And there was, I mean...
It was music, basically.
It was music.
And for 48 hours.
I was kind of trembling with the excitement of encountering music again live, in that live space, rather than just sort of in my ears, you know, in my headphones. So it was the most, you know, obviously we adore Cosmo and Flora, and the wedding was in the house where we recorded the first eight songs, or we got together and kind of recorded the bones of the album. And Cosmo and his brother Merlin, well, and Flora, all feature on the album with Rob. As well.
That's an amazing place. That's the house we went to when we walked with Cosmo for the podcast.
Yeah.
Yes,
you went down to Ballsbury
Wood.
Yeah, so that's where we were.
Yeah. And were you there as well, Robert?
I was there as well, yeah. There must be these people wandering along the paths a few hundred metres away. And they're like, oh my God, free Johnny Flynn concert. Didn't say that on the entry ticket.
It is strange. With performing with me, like, because I was very shy when people asked me to sing on the weekend, because I just... It's always one step forward, two steps back, and I have to get into the mode and kind of build up. Because I always feel too fragile, basically, and then I could build my exoskeleton and then
do it.
Live in that for a while. And when it's been a long time of doing it, then it's fine. But, yeah, I'm just reweaving myself.
You feel a bit exposed.
Yeah, I mean, I love it, but also I'm like, oh, God, this is weird. Oh, why do I do this? But then... it's good for me. You know.
I've said it to you before. Like, I always come away from spending time with Johnny. I feel like I've like gone to one of those tanning salons, except that the irradiation is like a goodness light. Like, you come away, you just feel so much calmer and happier, and it's very special, the aura that Johnny has. But what's fascinating, another fascinating thing, is that when I see him perform live with the band, or he's steps up on stage and suddenly it's like it's another Johnny. It's the exoskeleton or the weaving's done. You're just in such control of the room, and you just, the force coming off you is like it's another aura altogether. And it's amazing what it does to people who are listening to you, I've seen it. It's just, I mean, I really, you know, when you can perform the album, it's going to be, we will have waited a long time.
I'm looking forward
so
to it.
So special.
Yeah.
And that cottage in the woods, was that, did that have an impact on the way the record sounds?
Absolutely.
Huge.
Totally.
Yeah, windows open.
And it's called Lost in the Cedar Wood, but, and you were recording it in a wood.
Yeah, and there's pine forestry on one, so just right there, and as you come along the drive, there's huge pine forest, these giant trees on your left that are quite eerie. And then as we were getting going on these songs about the felling of this ancient cedar wood in the story of Gilgamesh, we could hear these chainsaws starting up and the crack of these pine trees falling in the woods. And it was just, yeah.
That was an eerie synchrony, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And
Robert, can you just sort of, I know this is probably ridiculous, but can you summarise the epic for us, just to give us a sort of sense of place? Because the felling of the cedar wood's a crucial element of it.
It is crucial and,
it, isn't?
And astonishingly premonitory as well, or kind of permanently true, as it were, in that strange way of myth. Mm. But the story is really very simple. It's about a man, Gilgamesh's encounter with mortality. So he's a proud, ruthless king, a poor governor ruling what would effectively have been one of the early sort of city-states on the banks of the great Mesopotamian rivers, the Tigris and the Euphrates. And then into his life comes Enkidu, the wild man, whose taming we've already spoken of, and semi-taming. And they fall into a great friendship. It's a story about friendship. Oh, friend, oh, my friend. And so there is a sort of echo with the joy to me of, you know, of the friendship that's at the heart of the making of the album as well. But as we always say, neither of us is Enkidu and neither of us is Gilgamesh. You know, no one's, but the Enkidu and Gilgamesh, I mean, they're like bad lads. They're like, it's kind of, they go to this sacred cedar wood, and there they meet Humbaba, the spirit of the sacred cedar wood. And really, Humbaba to me represents all that is animist, all that protects and embodies what is magical and sacred about natural places, which really modernity has kind of systematically slaughtered as it turns nature into resource. And that's what happens in this 4,000-year-old story. They strip Humbaba of his 7 protective auras. And when he's vulnerable, finally, this incredible god spirit, they kill him brutally. They cut his head off, blood's everywhere. And the gods then punish Gilgamesh and Enkidu. And they do it by killing Enkidu. Enkidu dies. And Gilgamesh can't believe that he's dead until this extraordinary detail, a maggot crawls out of his nose. And at that point, Gilgamesh has seen mortality. He has seen the deep. And then he goes off on this great grief-stricken journey, partly to get away from grief and partly to try and seek immortality again, and eventually he realizes that he can't find it. So it's the first great travel book, it's the first great piece of nature writing, it's an incredibly powerful myth and story. But this, the felling of the cedarwood, I just cannot get past the echoes it has. And I mean, we're speaking as the protests in Fairy Creek on Vancouver Island enter something like their 400th day, gigantic, galvanizing, spasming protest between John Horgan, the premier of British Columbia, and his wish to allow logging of 2,000-year-old yellow cedars. The felling of the cedar wood, sacred cedar wood, is happening now. And we're right on that, the forest brink, like the pivot point, and yet the oldest story in world, written story in world literature, carries the warning, don't fuck with the forests. And we still can't hear it.
Shall we carry on with our
walk?
Yeah,
let's do that. I think what we'll do is we'll go down this incredible beach avenue, and then we'll turn right onto the Roman Road, and probably could have another song on the Roman Road. Oh, look at this! It's just,
what have we got here?
Isn't that fabulous? The bees are just feasting on it, and we just got buzzed by an absolutely immense dragonfly.
What is this plant?
Well, I think this is the marjoram. So we're on chalk. So it's about 99 million years old, this bedrock. You see the flints and the chalk showing through everywhere, white here. So this is, you know, as with all chalk, we're standing on the bed of a fossilised, of a sea. So this was laid down by what I know is called, by geologists, called blizzard, which is this beautiful word for when the bodies of the coccolithophores, the kind of calcium and the foraminiferae, these calcium-bearing microorganisms that live in these marine oceans, and they just fall like snow for millions of years, and then compression happens and they become chalk, and if more compression happens, they become limestone and then marble, etc. But we're on the chalk, so. But I love the fact that it's astonishing to me that we're basically walking on top of a necropolis. Here's the beach avenue, by the way.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, wow.
Look at that. That is isn't that fantastic?
That's amazing. It just stretches away for forever, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you're in the Champs-Élysées.
Once, at the very end of this, walking down here, I saw a huge white riderless horse pass by the very end of the... you'll see it's like an aperture at the very end. And I ran to the end of the Beechwoods, and it's where it meets the Roman Road. The Roman Road runs perpendicular to this exit point. Ran to the far end as fast as I could, looked up and down the Roman Road. Nothing. No one, no horse with a rider, no riderless horse. And the Athona, the goddess who many of the stories around here are associated with, and the Roman stories often speak of white horses. So,
Wow. I'm sure you saw the spirit.
There's an augury.
I have no idea. I always tell these stories because there's sort of four or five of them that I've had in my life.
Please tell the story of the
Wonderbury or the...
No, the recent one.
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible.
I messaged Johnny from the Highlands because I was walking with my father through a wood, not unlike this one, a beechwood. Suddenly there was this kind of getting louder. It's the sound of something coming through the leaves of a tall beech tree. Boom, boom, boom. And then, boom, this big, soft thud as this object hit the steep side of the bank from which the beeches were growing. Rolled down, literally at 6 inches, it stopped rolling in front of our feet. And it was a tiny baby rabbit in its final seconds of life, a little bit of blood on it, curled up and, you know, looked up, nothing, no pine martin, no buzzard, couldn't see a thing, no idea where it came from. It had fallen from the sky to expire at our feet. And I messaged Johnny, I was like, if I was a Roman who believed in auguries, I'd probably better just, you know, kill myself now, because
that's a really bad omen.
That is not a good one. But it's an extraordinary thing,
isn't it?
Yeah, these strange...
Have you experienced any like that, Johnny?
Well, I'll tell you, the reason why my water bottle's currently insufficiently charged is because I got to Finsbury Park Station early this morning and decided to go into the park and practice some of the songs for today. And I sat on my guitar case, with my feet kind of crossed in front of me on the ground. I was just playing through the songs. And somebody came and sat and listened, and I thought, oh, that's so nice. Nobody's listened, heard any music for so long, and I'll just carry on playing. And I got up to go, and I said, oh, that's so good. And the last song that I practiced was a song that we did call Birdsong, which has become The World to Come. But it's birds are quite a strong sort of feature of it. And I looked down at my foot. My right foot is covered in just like the most improbable amount of bird shit. Like gloopy, like pigeon, sweaty pigeon poo. Just completely, like, just unbelievable amount of poo. And it was obviously, I was just sat right underneath the kind of roost.
Everyone's a critic.
And it was ironic that I was singing this delicate sort of... this song really is about that moment in May where...
Last May.
April, May, last year, when do you remember the temperatures started to soar and everything was getting quiet and we were going into the eerie cedarwood, of the pandemic, and suddenly birdsong and, all these natural wonders were sort of... representing themselves to us as we lost.
No traffic.
Yeah.
We could hear again.
Technology's shutting down and...
Desperate for anchor
points. Anyway, so I was singing that song and then as, it was a lovely kind of... It was like, in the sort of Zen traditions where the master comes and beats you around the legs with a stick to make sure you're paying attention. It was a bit like that. And it's bloody sentimental.
Yeah, it's a reminder that, nature's not exactly, you shouldn't be too sentimental about it.
On my way through the wood, wound a thread through the dream. Nightfall, footfall, trembling, looking for cracks in the seam. Tree tall, river call, tumbling branches, brushing the beach across the river, just out of reach. We are sat in the wish and the wave of our willow, wandering, wandering, ran away from the swish and the shade of our pillows, conjuring, conjuring, waiting for the lick of the wind and the rising sun draws a kiss from the bird.
words are all. The blackbird perched in the branches of the silver birch, growing from my chambered heart, singing through the rising dark, singing through the world to come. Can you hear with the ears of the owl and the otter listening? Accordion plays as the day grows hotter, glistening, glistening. There's a wildwood starting its march as a kingfisher flashes over the marsh. Far out to sea, there's a strange kind of silence. Gull cries, still sky, pause in the storm and a lull in the violent sunlight. Fly by. Drops fast to steady, time slows down to a coordinate steady. There's a blackbird perched in the branches of the silver birch, growing from my chambered heart, singing through the rising dark. Singing of the world to come, singing of the rising sun, singing of forgotten foes, singing of the ancient bird, singing with the opening bow, singing in this precious hour, singing of the broken world.
Yes, so good.
That'll be fun to do with an audience.
Wow.
I just want to describe the scene because, you know, people are listening to this, but we are standing in the middle of this beach avenue with the sunlight dappling down through the leaves, and Robert and Johnny are sitting side by side on this memorial bench with the guitar and the lyric book. And we have just heard the most astonishing performance. And I just wanted to reflect on that and to hope that we are, through your headphones and through your speakers, conveying how amazing it is to be here. Oh. It's just a privilege.
Yeah, totally.
Well, likewise.
What a theatre, what a stage. Yes. And the first line of this song, "On my way through the wood, wound a thread through the dream." It just feels like, you know, we've walked into the song. Mm. The song has walked into this place. Oh, that was awesome,
just amazing.
Johnny. That was
fantastic.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, cool. At the very end, if people listen to this on the album, you'll hear this smash and a crash comes at the very final seconds of that song, almost after as the chords are dying out. You know, we were in the kitchen and we were all, you know, hoedowning and stamping our feet. And then Johnny was like, just throw things around. Just get the cutlery basket. Get this, smash the pans. And you'll hear this big kind of crash as the cutlery basket goes down.
We had to, everything's kind of improvised. We really just had, you know, what we had.
Cosmo was whacking the tap. He was using the tap as percussion.
Just percussion.
And
like the old lady in the lady killers. He has to whack the tap for the hot water to come.
Yes.
There's a story behind the recording of, you know, the Fairport version of that Dylan song, you know, "If You've Got to Go, Go Now." It's "Si Tu Dois Partir."
Yes.
So they sing in French.
Their only chart hit.
Yeah, so good.
Somebody playing a milk bottle.
There's a milk bottle on top of a kind of stacked up bunch of percussion. You can hear it in the recording, but you hear the milk bottle fall and hit everything on the way down and then smash at the bottom in a break, and it goes ding 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 like that, and it's right
it's in time.
It's in time, and then they go, it's party, and they pick it up right on cue. You can imagine them just going, and it's so good in the recording. Anyway, so I wanted a bit of that spirit. Yeah, I can feel my, you know, I was talking about building my exoskeleton up again. I can sort of feel it coming back.
It's coming
like,
back.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I feel more like myself, because this is the self that I knew before that was totally unafraid, well, not mostly unafraid to get up and do that.
I wanted to pick up on something you mentioned earlier, Robert, which was that when we were in the worst of the lockdown, there was some discussion among some people about whether we could learn from the experience of having stopped the world, having pressed pause, and whether there might be a ground for optimism as a result of taking that time out to think. And, you know, I noticed some bits of that coming through in some of the songs that you talked about. But there's also some very dark imagery. I wonder if both of you have any sense of optimism about what might come from the future and from the experience that we've been through.
Well, I was always very sceptical of pandemic utopianism, and we heard a lot of it in the early days, and some of it was just pure mirage. It was pure miracle thinking. Oh, the dolphins are back in the Venetian canals. Yeah. Actually, that wasn't Venice. There were no dolphins back. So, and that for me became a motif of the, I think, very understandable human urge to dream in a utopian way at a time of dystopia.
You could cynically also characterise it as our ability to congratulate ourselves very, very quickly.
Or distract ourselves.
Look at this,
we're
not flying aeroplanes anymore.
Yeah, it's been called the anthropopause. I've written quite a lot about this idea of the Anthropocene, that we've had to confront ourselves as a terraforming species, our power to shape the planet, and the planetary future amplified by number and technology, to the extent that we are leaving legacies that will be legible for millions of years to come. And those legacies don't look great at the moment. They're mass species extinction, they're erosion, they're radionuclides from nuclear tech, and so on and so forth. And I don't think that the pandemic has broadly brought us to the necessary shock. And I think I see the climate crisis as having, it's been a terrible time for that. It set us back so long, just when we needed to be pushing forwards on that. And we now see this bigger
crisis.
So you
mean the pandemic put a stop to the kind of protests and the kind of pressure that was being put on for change?
Exactly. And
it's a distraction.
As a plane goes overhead.
As a plane goes overhead. And above all, it pulled our sight lines down to 1 week, 1 month, 1 year. It's all about getting out of the cedar wood. It's all, and we're so far from obviously being out of the cedar wood. But all the while, the climate crisis was just intensifying according to its own laws. And so now there's this reconfiguration, that this pivot back to the bigger problem, really, the one that's going to kill many, many more millions of people. Sorry, Johnny, I haven't given much cause for hope there. Can you?
No, it's how I feel. I think.
I don't want to interrupt you. Well, I do want to interrupt you, actually. Because I just wanted to reflect on the fact that we're stepping out into
this
Roman Road.
Yeah.
Which is straight as an arrow in both directions. It's a fantastic example, isn't it?
Yeah. And this crosses the Icknield Way. There's Fleam Dyke and Devil's Dyke, which are these old Anglo-Saxon earthworks, which are effectively barriers to entry to East Anglia, so they could tax travellers. So you can walk back into the Neolithic along the Icknield Way. You can, if you turn left at the end of this, which is what I did, and then you follow the Icknield Way, which Edward Thomas walked in 1911, you get to the Ridgeway, and the Ridgeway takes you to Dorset, and you know you don't more or less step off this path, so you get to Dorset, and that takes back 5,000 years. So I love this sense of the footpath network's incredible connectedness. That you can walk out of my door, along a suburban road, through a hole in a hedge, into a modern field path, onto the Roman Road, onto the Icknield Way. It's time travel as well as everything else.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Johnny, you were saying about the community in Hackney.
Well, no, I feel like one thing I noticed was that we naturally on a sort of community level, it was encouraging to see people being good to one another and looking out for each other, and the tiniest things becoming these very moving kind of distractions or beacons of hope, you know, musical performance in a square, in a tower block where everyone could come out. You know, I saw these, you know, videos coming out of Italy of things like that, and
But it sort of feels a bit transitory. It feels like it came and then it went again.
Yeah, now there's just a weariness now, isn't there? There's we've been so sort of battered and bruised by it all. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't recognise, like, the humanity that I knew then to now. I don't feel the same way I did then. And I think we've all been changed by it. I think there will be deep, you know, lessons to have been learned from it all, but it's still evolving, this bit of the journey, and I don't know, yeah.
But the work that you're doing with Robert is not just capturing a moment in time, but offering us some stories and some imagery that can open our minds to some of these issues.
Yeah. We want to make it relevant to people and to kind of ask these questions through our experience, through translating them into song, to kind of resonate with people and connect people and make this moment not a moment outside of themselves that was too painful to acknowledge, but just something that we're all bound in together. And using this ancient story to kind of find those resonances through times, when the dark times in the past as well.
Mm-hmm. And we always said that we hoped that we would make music that you didn't need to have read or heard of the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Mm.
You didn't even need to know that they were written in a pandemic year, that they, in a sense that's inevitable, because the oldest story and then we've lived through allegory, myth, archetype, we've thought ourselves exceptional, this is the first, you know, the first of the great plagues. No, it isn't, far from it. And in fact, you know, indigenous peoples have seen their whole communities wiped out by imported viruses and other diseases. You know, I hope that the songs live a life free of but resonating with both Gilgamesh and the present, the now.
Yeah. Are you a musician, Monke, Robert? I mean, do you wish that you had learned an instrument or that you could sing and perform?
Yeah. I spend so much time with musicians now. The Spell Songs musicians, of course, and they make music arising from my words, and it brings me more joy than I could possibly say. Johnny and I work together, and hopefully we'll, you know, carry on working and writing together for a while. And it's just magic to me. And all I really want to do at the moment is write songs for and with incredible musicians. I mean, Merlin bought me a set of the Bones.
Cosmo played the Bones for us.
Yeah, Cosmo plays them really well. Merlin plays them really well. And I think it's a sign that, like, I really want to get good enough on the Bones that I can accompany Johnny.
So you could be on the next album.
Well, I am on this one very distantly, as a backing singer and a kind of hollerer to rhyme with cholera of this choral line, this sort of shout, haul away in this amazing song, Home and Dry, that Johnny wrote.
His presence is audible, and not just audible, tangible throughout the record, as in. Yeah, listening to it, I'm right in that room where we were, and you're there, and Merlin's there. And
I'm tempted to ask you to sing it, Johnny, just to see whether Robert would join in. Is that possible, or is it too complicated a song to do on the guitar?
Do we have
things about stepping in there,
Should we scramble into the field? Can we get through that?
This is going to be a bit thorny.
We've got stuck in worse thickets before, Johnny. This is a bit...
I love it. That is narrow.
The colour of this is... Look at these bees and the thistles.
Oh, yeah, they're just face down in heaven, aren't they?
Oh, I'll roll with the waves till the numbness, and oh, the sea calls, your voice is my compass. I'm pulled out by the swell, but you're here to the shell. Sing it, you can listen to my ocean song. I'm singing through the roughest storm. Oh, when the winds are whipping at the bay, cup licking at the key, oh, we can feel a mustering squall. I wish that I could fly so I could be home and dry. I, oh, I wish that I could fly, so I could be home and dry and haul away. I stay here, swing through the seasons, look for a change here, question my reasons, now look and I'm leaving. Cause things are worth achieving. There's nets to be shot, son. Oh, I'm wet with the flotsam. Oh, and the winds are whipping at the big cup, licking at the key. Oh, we can feel a mustering squall. I wish that I could fly, so I could be home and dry. Oh, I wish that I could fly, so I can be home and dry and haul away. The sun sets bright as a furnace, but I'm not sure quite when my turn is. I'm searching for a landmark, gazing out through the dark. I need your reminding that the lighthouse is shining. Oh, and the winds are whipping at the big cup, licking at the key. Oh, we can feel a mustering squall. I wish that I could fly, so I could be home and dry. Oh, I wish that I could fly, so I could be home and dry and haul away. Didn't know if I was gonna do it.
I didn't know if I went, if I do what we do in the recording and go twice through it, I thought you'd leave me hanging. And I was like, oh, I've got to do it. And up until the last second, I wasn't going to do it. And
I was like, oh, I didn't know if we were going to do a soft haul away at the end or just end haul away. Well, that is, I think that is our first film duet, Johnny. And many people were long for it to
first
be the last.
Many.
But, yeah, no, first of many.
So nice. So
do you want to do another song straight away, and then we, while we're set up, and then we
let's do
a closing.
Yeah, let's. You okay for it?
Yeah,
is
yeah, yeah.
Energy, all right?
The sun really,
it's like, really quite hot, isn't it?
No, it's good. It's fine.
Okay?
It's nice. So let's just do it.
All right. Right. Should I just intro it a bit? Or
yeah.
Say?
Yeah.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a buzzard creeching away. Yeah.
Kew, kew.
It's very much a buzzard's wood. I hear them there so often. So this, this song ends the album. It's just called Ferryman on the album. I love the fact we've got buzzard. This is so perfect for this. God, I hope that is a buzzard, or else the birders are going to be all over me. But I'm pretty sure it is. God, it's really eerie song. This was one song that I wrote almost all the words for, and I wrote them in a. Basically in an evening, and it was early in summer, May time, and someone very close to me was having a very, very hard time of it. I was feeling desperate and sad, and when I wrote this song, and I just remember getting the first two lines, ferryman, ferryman, carry my memory on, and then thinking it was going to work. And so you sent me a message. In fact, I was here. I was at Wandlebury when I spoke to you on the phone about this song, and you'd sent me say, I've got this lovely melody for it. And then I listened to some of the demos, I think, sort of standing in the car park here. And I just felt this. I mean, this is the song that stops me. And I know lots of other people have started to respond to it very powerfully as well. But it's sort of unlike any other on the album, isn't it? And it
just, yeah. It was... In the same way that 10 Degrees of Strange felt like it needed to be the canon launch as the record, this was like almost always going to be the closing song. And it's the last in episodically in the story, isn't it?
Because he wants to sail out to the Isle of Immortality. So there's a sort of, you don't hear any of that in the song. I mean, it's just, anyway, we'll let the song do its work, shall we? It's probably best.
There
ferryman, ferryman, carry my memory on out to the island on the horizon, following path to the sun, following the path to the sun. Over the sandbar, holding the North Star, steady between mast and spar, creak of the oars and the hours, keeping watch for the power. Watch for the whale's breath, watch for the moon's dead. Down in the waters of day, ferryman, ferryman, carry my memory on out to the island on the horizon, following the path of the sun, following the path of the sun. For the stolen ones are broken, my sadness is woken, the sea rose a mistake. So stung by the hail, we shall far sail. We grow weak and frail, and with our arms made of granite, through a blaze of gannets, we roll off this planet. Ferryman, ferryman, carry my memory on out to the island on the horizon, following the path to the sun, following the path to the sun. Carry my memory on out to the island on the horizon, following the path to the sun, following the path to the sun.
What a song. So beautiful and sad. And
I can officially confirm that it is a privilege, a fascinating, moving, enlightening experience to go for a walk with both of you. And I'd like to say thank you very much for sharing your songs and your stories with us today on Folk on Foot. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matthew. You may have a tear or two in your eye as well.
It's been a very, very moving experience. And we're standing here in a golden cornfield, listening to the song, and I think it's just a perfect way to end and to leave the song to speak for itself. Yeah. Johnny Flynn and Robert McFarlane. And thanks very much to Cambridge Past, Present and Future, who look after the Wandlebury Country Park and keep it safe for future generations. If you enjoyed this episode, please think about becoming a patron of Folk on Foot. We've filmed the songs that Johnny sang today, and we're adding them to our amazing Folk on Foot on Film archive of more than 100 performances recorded all over the UK during our travels. If you want to see that, all you have to do is become a Folk on Foot hero. Go to folkonfoot.com and click on the Support Us button, and it's very easy to sign up. And there are other episodes that you might enjoy. There's a walk with Johnny Flynn on the Hackney Marshes and with Cosmo Sheldrake in Bolsbury Wood. So just look back through our back catalogue and you'll find plenty to keep you occupied. We rely entirely on support from our listeners to keep going, so please do try to make a donation if you can.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.